listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, making spies to fall in love with us and then leaving them at the altar. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy, Mike the Ghoul here, you know, drumming on the Cold War memories of Russia versus America. Talking Twice. James Bond Twice. Again.
Yeah, James yeah. Bond. James Bond in the Roger Moore era, which we have to admit right now gets real repetitive real fast. Yeah. I feel bad for him. We're going to get into this because we're going to do The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker today. But mm-hmm. I want to start by saying I feel bad for Roger Moore because watching him now on a second playthrough of these movies, I got to admit the dude is trying. The dude mm-hmm. wants to make good movies. But he has signed up for the franchise, and the franchise is just failing him. Not that I think The Spy Who Loved Me is bad, but, you know.
You're right. Like, he, say what you will about who's your Bond and who isn't your Bond, and we watch these together, and you know, it was a fun 3+ hours watching Bond. I loved it. He, aside from the scenes where there's supposed to be passion involved, he's mm-hmm. bringing that Hollywood energy and that, you know, that feel to James Bond. And then it's like kissing your uncle every time he's supposed to be passionate. It's just
he's very sexless.
Weird, man.
Yeah, he does weird. Not do the romance well at all, but he's trying to be a smooth, calculating secret agent. And I don't hate his performance most of the time. I just hate the stories he's starring in. Which is, it's really weird for me to say. Like, I didn't like the Sean Connery era that much. We've discussed that already. Yeah. But I at least felt like the stories were trying up to a point before they failed, and Sean just didn't give a shit. He was just going to play Connery. But Moore is actually trying to be James Bond, and the stories are just not any better for it.
It's something with the writing. These are written in the 60s and made into movies in the 70s. Yeah. You know, like it's a different time. Some things still feel weird. The futuristic stuff in this movie sometimes feels weird, but like the gadgets are strange, but they're a product of their time too, I think. But he is trying.
And he's trying. Yes.
The script writing and the writers are, I don't want to say failing because, you know, again, it's Bond. It made money, but B-Squad writers, I think, at best in this one.
Yeah. Now, before we get into the movies, we just want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsors for the week, LexCorp, building a better Earth here without the need of anyone but Lex Luthor. Thank you very much for your sponsorship. Starting off this week, we have The Spy Who Loved Me, which is actually one of the movies I remembered really liking from my first run through. It's James Bond going after some MacGuffin. The MacGuffin, let's be honest, doesn't really fucking matter to anything. But he's going after a MacGuffin, and he basically crosses paths with a Russian spy named Triple X. Not because it's porn and not because it's Vin Diesel, it's a lady. So, oh.
Shoo, plot twist.
He crosses paths with this lady, this female agent.
Major Anya Amasovov.
I'm not going to attempt to do a Russian accent. I'll let
Why
you handle
am I
that.
I'm butchering that.
I don't know. Anya Amasova. She is basically the KGB's version of James Bond. And she proves that really well early on. She's outsmarting him. They're having a good back and forth. You feel this whole will they, won't they chemistry, especially because, as we learn, James probably killed her lover in a previous mission, and now she's holding it against him. It's a thing. I like it. But they get wrapped up in a plot line involving aquatic megalomaniac Carl Stromberg, who wants to take the MacGuffin and do something with it to irradiate the world so fish can inherit the Earth. And it's got to tell you, from that point forward, it's a really dumb storyline. It's fucking stupid as all get out. Because it's basically, you only live twice, where they capture submarines to use those submarines against their other powers, so they bomb each other, but with water instead of space. And, like, that whole part is repetitive, and the back half of the movie basically forgets that Anya is in the film, and it's just a James Bond film. She gets captured and tied up and never once tries to free herself. And you're sitting there going, girl, you're Lady James Bond. Go do some shit or something. And the movie's like, James has to do it. He's the only one that can win.
I mean, she's a very capable agent, right? She's like, they incredible. Just kind of, I mean, it's the chairs, man. I think I pointed out so many times, like, what is with evil, you know, megalomaniacs and their lack of comfort when, you know, sitting? Like, everything they're in is just plastic and evil looking.
It is.
It's so terrible. And she's held down by, like, it looked like a seatbelt or something. Yeah. Like you can't unhook yourself. Like, come on, you're a little bit better than that.
Futuristic seatbelt technology. Who understands that at all? That whole thing plays out, and then of course the villain loses and James gets the girl and they fall in love, whatever, and then she's gone by the end of the movie. It's aggressively fine in the back half, which sucks because the first half of the movie is actually really good.
Yeah. Now the beginning, the back and forth between the spies, like, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if he's like underestimating her because she's a woman, or he's just, you know, attracted to her and she's just like, you know, I'm doing my job. Yeah. She's just outplaying him, but like, she gets the better of him quite a bit. And then, you know, she just kind of fades there at the end. You know, it's not, I guess it's not, you know, Agent Asimov and Bond. It's a James Bond movie and we can't have her showing up the lead anymore. Like it's a weird choice of what to do with her at the end. Cause she was a very capable sidekick, I guess, or whatever you want to say to James. It could have been a better story to see them. He's taken plenty of girls with him to go and do stuff, you know. Yeah. Like, why did you got to rescue her? Like, she seemed like the prime example to be someone to pair up with him rather than need rescuing.
Yeah, no. Instead of him working with the submarine guys to take down the evil villain, it should have been him working with her to take down the evil villain. She's at a level like with Tracy, not love wise, but like character wise, she's at that level. She could have been an equal to him, and the film just kind of forgets that at the last moment. It lets Tracy in on Her Majesty's Secret Service save herself, but it doesn't let Triple X save herself. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you can clearly see this is a very capable Russian agent here who can handle herself quite easily in many situations.
Yeah, but of all the notes that we discussed and had a thing, I think the only one that really matters is Jaws.
Yes, one of my favorite Bond villains. The man of very little words, except maybe like five of them at the end of the next movie we're going to talk about here. He's just a hulking, monstrous, brute guy. You know, I believe he also played, you know, in Happy Gilmore. He was the guy who was Happy's construction boss when he was, you know, before he became who he was. So like, I just like this guy. Yeah. Rest in peace, good sir. He plays that imposing role very well. And I mean, what kind of villain doesn't want to, if you're not throwing your shoe, let's just bite your spinal cord with these metal jaws. Like, it's just a very cool villain to me. He's got very little lines. He doesn't have a whole lot of development other than me hungry, I guess, but
he likes to bite things with his metal jaws, and he is very good at it.
Yeah, he stays in his lane.
He knows what he's good at. That is very true. But also, to his credit, dude does not die.
Shoo. Like, it molds together, but I mean, this dude's got like Looney Tune Teflon in DNA, man. Like,
he does.
I've never seen somebody like do things that the Wile E. Coyote does in a movie and walk away. God,
he crashes through walls. He gets buildings dropped on him. He explodes more than once. Hell, in the second movie, he survives deep space. Fucker always comes back. Jaws is the real MVP here.
He really is. I will always love him as a Bond villain. You can never change my mind about that.
I liked this movie for what it is. I really wish that it could have had a more original storyline. And I also really wish that it hadn't just forgotten that Triple X existed in the back half and just sidelined her. They get onto the submarine and she goes from being a capable agent to being a piece of TNA. In fact, they even give us, I think, a little side boob and some nipple, which is, I was weirded out by that. I'm sitting there going, why are you actually showcasing nudity in this movie? That's what, PG and supposed to be for everyone? Guys, this is inappropriate time for this, and I'm like, normally I don't even care about that kind of thing, but felt a little weird. But then second that it does that and they're like, oh, she's actually hot and a lady, the film decides to never let her be a secret agent again. She is only TNA at that point.
It's true. And, you know, we get plenty of naked girls already dancing in the, you know, the title crawls of the movie here. You know, plenty. I mean, you can see the full on.
Yeah.
The full Monty if you're looking hard enough there.
No, yeah, so, they don't hide it very well.
Yeah, I don't know if we need the gratuitous side boob and nipple from what's supposed to be our Russian agent capable woman.
Our second lead. Yeah. They don't need to reduce her to TNA at that point, and the movie does, and I was unimpressed. Now,
pretty girl pretty, I guess, you know, in the 70s.
Becomes her story halfway in, and I was just not pleased by it. She should have been there fighting alongside Bond. And now, from The Spy Who Loved Me, we then transfer over to Moonraker, which is functionally the same movie all over again. Functionally the same movie. You have Bond getting dropped into a story to figure out a MacGuffin. And the MacGuffin, again, doesn't necessarily... I don't even remember what it is he's initially going there to figure out, because does it matter? Not at all. But while he's researching the MacGuffin, he ends up meeting up with a American CIA agent, Holly Goodhead.
Yes.
The movie's
We're not even hiding it anymore now.
Trying at this point. How can we top Pussy Galore? How about Holly Goodhead?
I mean, you know what? It's a little more PG, I guess, well, and than then, Pussy Galore.
But... I mean, if you want to factor into the fact that Anya in the previous movie was Triple X as her name, like, yeah, the movies know exactly what they're trying to sell here. Anyway, he crosses paths with Holly Goodhead, figures out she's a CIA agent and that they're working the same case. And much like with Triple X, the two have a back and forth where they kind of outplay each other for a little while. Although, to be perfectly honest, Goodhead is not nearly as good at it as Anya was. And he eventually just kind of takes over the case from her, and she kind of just wanders along behind him, except for when they go up to the space station, because eventually they go up to space. I'm getting ahead of myself. So basically, the bad guy is Hugo Drax, a space industrialist, not an aquatic industrialist, who wants to irradiate the world and kill all life on it so that he can build a new colony of his super people to take over.
Yeah, we have Atlantis in the previous movie, followed by Eden in this movie. Yeah. You know?
Eden in space, so they can eventually land once the weird toxic agent virus, whatever, that he unleashes is gone, and the Earth is his again at that point. I suppose it's only supposed to kill, like, humans. It doesn't kill anyone. It's not clear at all how the agent really works or what it's going to affect. But no matter the case, Bond and Goodhead have to go up and stop Drax at his base and blow it up to prevent that from happening, so that the Earth is saved. And if you just transplant water into space, you have the same movie.
Yeah, functionally the same thing. But, I mean, as far as a formula, I mean, it's Bond. It works for them, right?
Like, I guess. If this movie had come out a couple movies after The Spy Who Loved Me with some other plots in the middle, I probably, like, I always notice when they're reusing stuff because there's only so many Bond points to put around. But I probably wouldn't mind it as much. But when you have the exact same plot back to back, like, the guys are just like, hey, you know, we can just rub this script over the other one and no one's gonna notice because we put some Star Wars in it, because that's it was basically Eon Productions said, we want our own Star War, give us a Star War, because Star War is huge, we need a Star War. So they took the plot of the previous movie and then put it in space. That's it.
You're trying to capitalize on what's good and what's fresh. You know, people wanted to see space movies. Let's put Bond in space. At least they gave it a clever name. I do like Hugo Drax, too, as a villain name. I think that's kind of a pretty cool name as far as some of the ones. You know, it's up there for me, but, like, Goldfinger as, like, kind of a cool name.
He's such – like, we barely talked about the previous villain.
Cool name. Yeah, no, no. It's a cool name.
He's as much of a nothing villain as the previous guy was. Well, I don't care about either of them. They are – absolutely in no way as good as like the Man with the Golden Gun or Goldfinger, you know?
The villains are completely secondary to whatever MacGuffin, the stakes of saving the world and Bond with getting the girl. Like, Spectre is no longer mentioned in these movies. It's just some random thing now, and this is the Bond we get for the next 18 years or whatever.
Kinda. I like that. I don't want to say it improves. Sometimes it improves. It doesn't always improve. But it's really repetitive right now. And this is, again, part of the reason why the Roger Moore era sucks. And it's not Roger Moore's fault. He is trying here, giving it his all as a performance, trying to make something work out of a film that he's already done once before. But it's hard to sit here and watch this and go, wow, you guys really thought you were making a good movie here? Like, really?
He's trying to impress, you know. Roger Moore is bringing it, and again, the recycled and, you know, we're gonna cross this out, we're gonna shift this around here plot, it does him no favors. They're really weakly using the females in these movies.
Goodhead sucks here. She's her character's not good. She's not well written. I honestly don't even think Lois Childs does that good of a job with the character. She kind of feels lost in the role. She's just not that interesting to watch, and she doesn't do that much. She does get to fly the space shuttle that they take up, which, credit, that's one more thing than Anya got to do in the second half of her film. But it's not a lot, really. Honestly, the MVP, once again, is Jaws.
Yeah, Jaws is the henchman. You know, he replaces the guy Chiang, who Bond bested in the first 20 minutes of this movie. I what a forgettable henchman that dude was.
So forgettable. I forgot that he was here.
Like Chiang was this guy at the beginning, and then Jaws suddenly takes over. So then he kind of has like a secondary antagonist role throughout the movie again as well. And then, you know, they give him the turn at the end where he's, you know, he finds love with like this girl who. The thing I find funny about that movie, though, too, is like you look at all the people Drax is bringing in, like all these perfect specimens, and like I'm not saying the girl's not attractive, but like, you have this one look, and then you let's just give one of them, give her pigtails and glasses, and we'll call that the outcast. Like, I don't understand.
You know, she's if you took the pigtails and the glasses off, she'd be another perfect specimen, but because she has pigtails and glasses, she's an obvious three, and she's the one for Jaws. Like, yeah, I don't know. But
my man won in the end, though. I mean, that's top marks for my buddy Jaws.
He did a quick face turn, became a good guy. He gets to get the girl. He gets to survive, and then he rides off into the sunset, because I'm pretty certain we never see him again.
Yeah, he's a two-movie guy, and the legacy will live on in my heart as a character in this franchise. We'll see the kind of henchmen we have coming up in these other movies. I'm not sure if we have, you know, a second-in-command compared to, you know, whatever weak-ass villain they're going to throw at us, but we'll see. I know there's some good villains coming up, too, and I'm excited to see that, but we're going to be a little while till we get there.
This is an utterly forgettable movie if it weren't for the fact that it has Jaws. And it goes to space. And you like it because it has Jaws and it goes to space. And I can't argue with either of those points, but it takes a good, like, hour 50 minutes to get to space. And the only thing keeping me going here is Roger Moore and Jaws. And that's a tough sell, man.
I mean, it is. But at least they're trying to give James a spy to do in these. I just think it comes to the detriment of like anything else that anybody else does.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
He wanders around for a little while. He follows some clues. He completely destroys a glass museum, which was you clearly set up only so he could then come through and destroy it like a bowl in a china shop later. And then he goes to space. And it's some real weak ass space. I'm gonna be honest with you.
Like, yeah, it is.
That whole last section where it's like the CIA and MI6 fighting against Drax's people in space, it felt like the water section of Thunderball all over again. Yeah,
very just like random choreography for the fighting. We're sending up a group of space marines, like just randomly prepared. Like,
where did the U.S. get space marines in 1979? Yeah,
very conveniently ready to go,
right? Like, with lasers and everything.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone from the man with the golden gun to the man with the plasma rifle. Like, I don't understand here, but they were trying to hit on, like you said, like the, you know, Star Wars would come out, like space was, we had just gotten there in the 60s with the moon landing. People are trying to bring that back, I guess. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it's a fun Bond movie. I like the villain. I'm still not a big fan of Roger Moore, but I can at least respect the game.
I respect what the actor is trying to do. I just can't respect the movie. This is a nothing burger of a film, which, you know what? It's not offensively racist, so I'll still take it.
You know, that's fair. There's no yellow face in this, so, you know, we already got a win so far.
No yellow face, no putting a white dude as the central role in a blaxploitation film. We could do worse, okay? Yeah,
definitely.
So, I want Roger Moore to get one really good film. I keep waiting for it. We so far haven't seen it. With three to go, I'm kind of starting to get worried he's never going to get it.
We'll see, right? Because, like, there's not a whole lot of time that passes between these. But, I mean, you can already tell, like, he's a little bit older than the first two movies. And he's not getting any younger as he progresses. And it's only going to get more awkward the younger the girls get. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Think he said that in his last time in the role, he was, like, 53. And they paired him up with an 18-year-old. And he's like, I could be her grandfather. This is not right. Right, guys.
And respect to him for, you know, saying that and being like, I'm done after this, guys.
Yeah, I'm out. This is not comfortable for anyone anymore.
Then it's okay when it looks like you're kissing your uncle, because then it's just weird.
I'm not sure it's ever okay. This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, reminding you it's never okay to kiss your uncle. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey, your buddy Mike the Ghoul here. Gonna go and chew my way through my half a Raptor tinfoil. Like, I'm hungry.
We will see you all next time.